I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. Happy New Year. I can't believe it's already 2022. I feel like we kind of blinked and 2021 went flying by, but here we are, new year, new opportunities. We're excited to be kicking off the year with you guys. I've got my co-host Rob McDonald here with me. How are you doing, Rob?
Hey, Brittany. You know, I'm doing well. It is crazy that 2022 is already here. It seems like the Christmas holiday, and it always does, was just a whirlwind, you know, the family and the Christmases and trying to plug in hunts and getting outdoors, and the days are short, you know. I mean, you wake up and it seems like it's getting dark just after you eat lunch. So you got to get out there and take advantage of the daylight when you can. And unfortunately, it sort of seems like all of a sudden we're talking about these late season hunts and the end of hunting seasons. And I suppose
a little doom and gloom.
Yeah. It's a little doom and gloom. You know, there is that kind of lull time between these late seasons and the spring stuff. You know, I'll start thinking about the white bass run and the crappie bite and turkey hunting and all those things. But we got to just be in it right now. And we've still got ducks. We'll be reopened. We're in a split in the zone that I'm in. We can hunt upland through the end of the month, and geese and squirrels into February. And so there's definitely opportunity. You know, there's Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks do the put and take trout in several places around. And if we get a cold blast, I don't know, a lot of our listeners probably are hoping we don't, but if we do, there might be some hard water fishing still in our future. So anyway, yeah, I've been trying to
crossed.
Yeah, right. I've been trying to soak up the Great Plains outdoors. And you know, my oldest son, Mason, and I recently, we had a fantastic duck hunt just to close out the first segment, and shot a 2-man limit of Drake canvasbacks. So that's
nice.
Yeah, kind of a bucket list thing.
And Merry Christmas.
Yeah, that's right. Yep, Merry Christmas. He was pretty sure we needed to save them for the taxidermist. I think we're probably going to save them for the frying pan, but...
You gotta appreciate that.
yeah and my wife Laura and I, we actually got out yesterday. We live out in the country, and we're able to pretty well just go out our back door and take a bird dog, and got into a healthy covey of quail. And she took her first bobwhite quail of this season.
Nice.
And, so that's always a good time. And happy to get out and hunt. You know, she's hunting over the family dog, found the bird, she shot the bird, family dog retrieves the birds, and it just a little icing on the cake, right?
Yeah, that's pretty special. Not many people have that all in one setting, right? I love seeing pictures of you and your kids get out, especially your wife. I mean, truly, that's sometimes a rarity in today's world, is that a whole family can get out and go, and that the whole family does want to hunt.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Speaking of, you know, those pictures I post on my social media, but if the listeners go check out the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast on Instagram and Facebook, try and share a lot of that stuff there, and Brittany sharing stuff from her adventures. So go check that out. Speaking of upland hunting, I heard that you had this great experience, this opportunity, just, you know, Merry Christmas, just before Christmas, right?
Yeah, we've had a pretty good couple weeks leading up to Christmas. We spent about 5 days out in Southwest Kansas filming with Ron Shera and the Flush TV.
Wow.
I know.
Opportunity, right?
It was pretty neat. And when I spoke to a lot of folks out in that neck of the woods, which is where I grew up, their eyes kind of got big and googly eyed because he's a pretty cool guy. He's a big deal. And it was a really unique opportunity to take out to Southwest Kansas.
Yeah. So tell us about the hunt, the birds, hunting with Ron, all the details. But
yeah,
I guess just first, knowing your passion and what you do in your professional life, right? I'm guessing this was an opportunity to get young men and women out and to be an outdoor mentor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was really cool. And to make a really long story short on how we kind of got connected with the Flush and Ron, our good sponsor, Walton's Inc. If you don't know who they are, they're everything but the meats. Go look them up. They do a lot of home processing. They sell equipment to larger corporations that do processing. They invited a couple guys from the Flush or Minnesota Bound down to our annual fundraiser. And they just had a great time connecting with us and our mentors and some of our kids that were there. And they said, you guys are kind of a diamond in the rough. And we said, yeah, we are. Because I think we can kind of try to fix that and maybe get you guys some time on either television or a podcast, because we'd love to share what message you guys are putting out there. And we are just so grateful for that. And to get how it got started, we recorded a podcast with Travis Frank, one of the co-hosts on The Flush, and he was all tickled pink by it and said, hey, we gotta get out there. So look at your schedule. And of course, working with folks from Minnesota, their hunting seasons are a little different than ours. Mm-hmm. And they're traveling all over as well. So we had to be kind of flexible with when we were going to make it happen. And we kicked around doing the youth season and that didn't work, and ended up doing right before Christmas where Ron himself could come out. And that was pretty cool. So they got to make the trip out west and flew into the Dodge City Airport. And I'm sure they were super impressed by that as they landed on the tarmac and walked out on the tarmac.
Yep, yep.
But it was really great, really, really great. We in total had about 10 kids hunting over 3 different days. And so we wanted to set this up to where we could really showcase our whole program's entirety, right? We have 20 years of programming to explain in a 30-minute episode. Mm-hmm. So we invited the kids out from the Larned High School trap team, and which is in Larned, Kansas, and then the Dodge City 4-H team, which was really exciting for me because I went to Dodge City High School and I'm an alumni. And it was really neat to connect with some folks there and be like, cool, I'm an alumni and I'm super excited to get these kids out. And some of them were like, okay. But mostly all of them were like, man, this is a cool opportunity to do this. And a lot of these kids didn't really ever watch The Flush. So it was kind of cool to show them this TV show.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. A lot of those kids probably don't watch normal program television, right?
Right. And realistically, if it's not on Hulu or Netflix, they're not probably going to find it.
If it's my kids, it's YouTube, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
they
exactly
don't even want to watch Netflix. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was fun explaining to these kids and their coaches and parents, like, this is going to be a filmed TV show. So we're going to have a couple cameramen following us around. It's going to be pretty organic, lots of conversation, but ultimately we are still hunting. So we're going to conduct this as a normal hunt, but we're just going to have a little camera following us around the whole time.
Very cool. Now you said 10 kids over 3 days, but that wasn't 10 kids on each day.
Nope. So we had 4 kids from each trap team. So four kids from Larned, 4 kids from Dodge City. And then our last day we had 2 kids come out through our Big Brothers, Big Sisters program, which was really special because one of the kiddos was a young lady I've been mentoring since 2015 when I got involved with Outdoor Mentors. So that was really special to share with her and get out there and go.
Yeah. You're Aunt Brittany by this time, right?
I really am. Kind of like, cool. Almost like the annoying big sister though, too. I'm always like, do you have a boyfriend? Is he nice? How are your grades?
But you know, that's when those things happen, those conversations, for at least for me, it's, you know, in the duck blind or in the pickup on the way to a deer hunt or whatever. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's hard to connect with kids sometimes, and especially in today's world where everything is so media driven. And
right,
when you can finally organically connect with a high schooler and get them to open up to you, I mean, it's special, and you have to recognize that as a mentor and just as someone who cares about that person in general, like, man, I gotta I got to do the work here and get to know them a little better and
get them to agree to go someplace where there's no Wi-Fi and take their
earbuds. Yeah, let them know they can trust me.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So where, I mean, we don't need any pins or even counties, but you know, what was the habitat like? Where did you find the birds? You know, Southwest Kansas, I imagine you weren't close enough to throw a rock into New Mexico or Colorado, but, you know, we're talking dry upland farming, right? Stubble fields, CRP, waterways, that type of stuff. So where'd you find the birds?
Yeah.
What was the habitat like? How many, you know, what was the bird population like, I guess?
Yeah, definitely a lot of all of that. We hunted a variety of private lands, and then some public lands as well. And, you know, I'll tell you what, the bird numbers weren't great. Definitely not like they've been in the past. And it is really dry out there. And yeah. I don't know if that's one of the main reasons. You could read a ton of explanations why, but, we actually did some pin raised birds in different various, you know, private land locations with some outfitters to help us on getting these kids on some birds too at first, because a lot of these kids have not upland hunted. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, listening, you know, upland hunting can be a little dangerous for kids walking through some thick ground and having a bird flush in front of them and have dogs work on the ground. We have to be really cautious of teaching them how to properly hunt. And so we did a lot of that type of hunting before we traipsed out into doing some wild bird hunting. And we were able to hunt one public land, which I probably shouldn't put it on the map.
Yeah, right. Shh.
But it was a really, really awesome property. Again, with it being so dry, and the day we hunted this land was after that gnarly windstorm came through. And I don't know if any of you guys know what we're talking about, but you know, forecast predicted wind gusts up over 100 miles an hour in certain locations in Southwest Kansas. And of course, that was like our first day hunting.
Yeah, that was wild. And
it was honestly terrifying. So I grew up in Southwest Kansas, so I know the wind blows like no other. But when I'm seeing what I'm seeing, I'm like, this makes me really nervous. So we got started pretty early that day. And I told Ron and all the kids and the mentors, I'm like, hey, just so you know, this is going to get a little dangerous if this is what's actually going to happen. So we need to hunt hard and fast this morning. Mm-hmm. and get out of here before those winds pick up. And I kid you not, by 10:30, 11 o'clock, the wind was blowing 55 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it went from 20 to 55 in an hour. And it was a little scary. So at that point, the Minnesota guys, especially Ron, he's like, I've never experienced this before. We had tumbleweeds literally hitting us like in the air.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, like, for sure.
Yeah, we think we should probably wrap this up. So we did, and I'm so glad we did, because we, you know, wind gusts hit about 109 miles per hour out at our airport.
Yeah.
And I mean, when I got home, I could barely see in front of me. Semis were in the ditches.
Yeah.
It just
the,
not
the a good next situation. Morning, the sun came up,
mm-hmm.
and it was beautiful, wasn't it?
Man, it was still. It was cold. It was. But, you know, it was so wild, and you expect this. When we were walking through these fields, it was just like a cloud of dust from our boots up. And it was just like the smoky haze around us the whole time, because everything was so dusted and laid down, too, from the wind.
Right. Yeah. So you're out there walking around looking for birds, I'm guessing with dogs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Did you tell us were you finding the birds in the grass? Were they in the crop fields?
We found most of them in some like really thick stubble. And they are holding pretty tight. So like even when we worked with some really great dogs, we had three German Shorthair pointers. Thanks to our mentor, Dennis Allison, I'll give him a shout out, because he worked his butt off and so did his dogs for us over those 3 days, and a few labs as well through Cody Coolidge. He's an outfitter out there in Southwest Kansas, and they all worked so well together. But I tell you what, they pointed those birds and it would take us all but kicking through
really
that grass to get them to flush. Yeah, they are holding really tight. But mind you, I think that was also because those winds were so bad.
Yeah, the day before.
A lot of that thick grass, especially on the public land we were hunting, it was literally laid down as if like it looked like deer were bedding in there. And you could tell where deer were bedding. But then there's this other areas where it's just matted down so badly. from those gusty winds.
Gotcha.
So we pushed quite a few birds on that property. That was really thick hunting. And we had kids with us. So obviously we move a little slower than probably your most, your average hunting group.
Yeah. Walking through that thick stuff, especially when it's laid down, that's no cakewalk.
No, so. You know, and I'm experienced and I was like, dang, I'm tired. Like it was not easy. And you know, these are not like small sections either. This particular area was a mile by a mile. So
right.
Had a long way to go. So we definitely tried to pace ourselves, but we moved quite a few birds there, knocked a few wild roosters down, which was really awesome. The kids could really see how these tail feathers look so differently on wild birds versus pen-raised birds. And they just act differently too. So it was really cool to show them the difference between those two types of birds that you can hunt out there. Moved a ton of deer. Couple really large bucks, which was hard to watch when you still had a tag in your pocket.
Yeah. No, were they mule deer, whitetails?
They were whitetails. Okay. Yep.
Very cool.
Yeah, that was a good experience. Really good experience.
So did you see any prairie chickens, fur bears of any kind?
We didn't. We saw no prairie chickens, which doesn't really surprise me. I know they're there, but we didn't run into any of them. We did bust a few coveys of quail, shot a few quail, which was neat. The Larned High School team got into a bunch of them our first day right before that wind picked up. And it was funny because two of the kids have never shot a quail. They didn't even know what a quail looked like.
Really?
Well, they move really fast.
Oh, yeah.
And if we say quail, you got to get ready. And of course, this covey flush that the dogs got on. And this one kiddo took a shot, knocked it down. He goes, I was not ready for that.
Yeah, that happened fast.
Yeah. But it's really cool. He'd never seen a quail. He's like, well, what's it taste like? You know, how do you cook it? And that was really fun to share with them too.
As a Robert myself, I've always been partial to the bobwhites.
So. Yeah. It was fun talking about the different species of quail too. They didn't realize that there's so many variations of a quail across the US. And you know, what kind of noise does a quail make, right? And they were shocked when it was like bobwhite.
Right. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was neat to share that. Got into some quail the second day as well. Those kids, and we had some chucker fly in there too. Of course, those are pin raised from weeks ago with our outfitter that we were with. But again, those birds fly pretty fast, and the kids had no idea the variation between a quail or a chucker and a hen.
Pheasant. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So that was, and I'm super proud of a couple of them because at one point we were hunting a little both of private and public ground, and a chucker got up and a kid could have shot it, but he's like, it looked like a hen to me. So I didn't want to. And
some discipline there. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. And I was like, that's the best thing I could hear all day, because that is what we want to teach these kids, is if you don't know what you're shooting at, you don't shoot it. And there'll be another one maybe down the road.
Yeah. Very cool. So you mentioned a young man or lady shot a quail and then inquired, how do I eat this thing? How do I?
Yeah.
So what happened to the birds? So you got a successful hunt. You get these young people out. You're hunting with the TV cameras and you're really mixing the pot. You got outdoor mentorship, you got media going on, you're exposing kids to new things. But at the end of the day, right, we're collecting food, right?
Yeah.
So what happens to the birds, that type of stuff?
Yeah. So we cleaned up all of the birds for these kids, and really not just us, right? We show these kids how to clean birds, and it's fun to show them different methods. As we all know, there's many ways you can clean a rooster or a quail. And so we break those birds down, and we didn't do any of the cooking those days, but we sent the kids home with baggies full of their meat, kind of gave them some direction on what they can do with it. The Larned team was actually going to back to their hometown, and that was the day the wind kicked us out too early, but they were going to all go together and do a little cookout with their harvest.
Nice.
Very nice. It's always fun. I love getting pictures afterwards of kids cooking in the kitchen, or I got to, you know, cook this for my family from my hunt. And it's like this really cool sense of pride that you get from them.
Absolutely.
They're obviously pumped. They shot a bird and they, you know, did what they did on their hunt, but the taking it home and feeding their family or their friends is a whole nother part of that, that they get to experience.
For sure. You know, I often lose sight of if you're introducing somebody to the outdoors, no matter, you know, in this case, a teenage youth, and you sit back and think about for the last more than a decade, their experience with food has been, you go to the grocery store, you exchange some money for whatever it is, you know, some protein wrapped in cellophane in a foam box.
Right.
It's a lot different dynamic.
And, yeah.
I'm sure that a lot of those kids, that's a big takeaway. As soon as they figure out, hey, this can be delicious, and that's a whole new way of, mm-hmm. of acquiring food.
Yeah, a very organic way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They do get pretty excited, and I always like to lead our hunts with, you know, there's no stupid question, there's no dumb question, and I don't care how long you've been hunting a certain species, you still learn something every hunt. That's from start to finish, and finishing is cooking your game. So if you have questions on how to cook a pheasant, you know, let us know, because we probably have 100 recipes between five of us, right?
Yeah.
And we all like different versions of the game we have, and it's fun to share that with them.
Yeah. You know, I've been lifelong pursuit of hunting and fishing outdoors, and to your point, I learn something every time.
Mm-hmm.
So just when you think you've got the ducks figured out, or you've got the deer figured out, or you know where those pheasants are going to be and how they're going to flush, you're wrong. So,
yep.
Cool. Very cool. Thank Congratulations you. On a great experience. And
we're really thankful for it. And I'm so glad the kids had so much fun. It was great to show Ron and our film crew, Aaron, around Southwest Kansas. They got a big kick out of exploring Dodge City and
cool
Boot Hill and El Capitan and Wyatt Earp and all of that good stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm sure they'll do a really good job at displaying all of that. And, you know, just being able to get out with Ron Shara was just itself just really rewarding and super exciting. I could talk to him all day.
Right.
I really got to know him a little better about, you know, how he got started in the business he's in. And, you know, mm-hmm. to simply put it, he was involved with the DNR at one point.
Gotcha.
He was a biologist. Mm-hmm. And so he just slowly worked his way through that career and landed some television shows and got involved with that. And here you have The Flush that's been airing for over, I think, 18 years. I'll have to double check, but
wow.
It's really cool how he can paint different pictures of hunting in the U.S. and can show groups like us off to the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of Ron, I think you mentioned to me he's got a book out. Is that right?
Yes, he just came out with a book. And if you know Ron, or if you don't know Ron, I should say, you should just assume that he tells the best stories, because he does. Like, you just get captivated by his words and the way he talks. And you can actually get his book out on Amazon right now, and it's called Mostly True Tales of a Life Outdoors. I've read through a few chapters already. It's great. He talks about anything from, you know, first hunts of his own to raising dogs to losing dogs, anything and everything in between. It's great.
Fantastic. So listeners, if you're looking at these short winter days, and maybe you're curled up by the wood stove or something, the fireplace, looking for a good book, definitely check out Ron's book.
Yes.
And while we're plugging literature, I'm going to go ahead and plug the Kansas Wildlife and Parks magazine. I'm a regular contributor, and it's a little bit late. The November, December issue just delivered in my mailbox yesterday, and I didn't know it. So I knew I had a pheasant spread, double page spread in this issue. But when I grabbed it out of the mailbox, the picture on the cover is a picture of a pheasant, real close up, zoomed in. And I was like, man, that picture looks familiar. That's cool, you know. And so I get into the house and I open it up, and inside the front cover, cover photo by Rob McDonald. So
nice.
I was like, that's why that looks familiar. So
you made the cover.
Yeah,
that's very cool. Awesome.
So
they do a great job with that magazine too. And it's from folks like you who can contribute good stories and good content to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some of our regular contributors are Michael Pierce, who had a long tenure at the Eagle. Still contribute some there. Another contributor is Brent Frazee. So anybody that followed the Kansas City Star for, I don't know how many years, but a lot, Brent and Michael both contributed vast amounts to that work community. Rick McNary's one of our contributors. He started the Shop Kansas that features local ranchers and farmers. And if you don't know Rick, follow his stuff. He's a great guy. So, and I'm in there. I'm scheduled to be in every issue, I think, through 2022. So far, we've got all that worked out. And
nice.
Yeah. So I think we've got your reading set up for a little while. Go buy the book and subscribe to the magazine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you guys mark your calendars for July of 2022 when this episode comes out.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. That'll be exciting. We're going to have to talk about that. When that airs, where we can find it. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe we could do one of those breakdowns, you know,
yeah.
We could film you doing some commentary on the show.
There we go. I like it. That'd be fun. I like it. I like it.
So what's next?
You know, January is a busy month, especially here in Kansas. We, with Outdoor Mentors, we have over 70 antlerless deer hunts. between last weekend, the 1st of January, all the way through certain parts goes till the 23rd. So that's a great opportunity to do some doe management. Yep. And a lot of our landowners see it that way. So again, that number we have of deer hunters, that's thanks to our landowners and seeing the opportunity to get kids out during that time frame. So I'm going to be deer hunting probably every day until the 23rd, but I can't complain. It's a great way to fill the freezer for some of these families and teach these kids how to deer hunt.
Very cool. Great. Well, yeah, we may or may not, my family get out for a doe hunt. Mm-hmm. Our freezer is pretty full. Mason and I both harvested a buck during the general season. I've been out west and taken some quail and a few pheasants, and we've done a fair amount of duck hunting. I actually ground up like 30 plus pounds of Italian sausage that I make from breasted duck meat.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that was a process.
Yeah. And it's delicious. In fact, we just had pizza two nights ago with some of that on it. And
nice.
Make meatball sub sandwiches and all kinds of stuff. But
yeah, that's good eating.
Yeah. So as much as I enjoy deer hunting, I wouldn't be surprised if I don't sneak out, but it's not top of my list right now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm excited for some more goose hunting and maybe a little bit of trout fishing before, you know, springtime and the turkey start gobbling and all that.
Mm-hmm. That'll be here before we know it.
That's right. So, while we're plugging, I'll go ahead and plug, make sure to our listeners, if you want to support the outdoors, make sure that you find some kind of conservation group, whether that's Ducks Unlimited, Delta Waterfowl, Pheasants Forever, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, National Wild Turkey Federation, Outdoor Mentors. They've all got a great mission and do plenty of work for access and getting folks outdoors. So find one that fits you and your passion and your schedule and get involved.
Yeah, it's a great way to kick off the year too, right?
Absolutely. Yep, for sure.
Well, we're excited about lining up some guests here in the future. Our next episode will be featuring Chad Dawson, and he is with a outfitting organization here in central Kansas called Sky Panda. He's also part of Delta Waterfowl. So we're excited to have him on to talk a little bit about outfitting and waterfowl hunting in Kansas.
Cool. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, please tell your friends to give us a listen at the Great Plains Outdoors podcast. Thanks for joining us, everyone.
All right. See you, Brittany.
See you, Rob. Have a good day.
You too.